memory work, a couple of things, a couple of words that we talked about last week. What does the word vanity mean in the book of Ecclesiastes? What does that word mean? Vanities, useless, worthless, void, okay. The term under the sun, what does it mean? Okay, living in this earth, living in this world without God, okay, and those terms that we use, especially under the sun, don't just think about the earth here, because it does talk about the earth, but it talks about living in this world without God, okay? When you study in the book of Ecclesiastes, some may look at it as a book that is somewhat sad, and there are some sad parts to it. There are some depressing things that goes with the book of Ecclesiastes. But as you look at it in another perspective, it is a book of encouragement in different ways, okay? So we talked last week about chapter 1. Today, we're going to get into chapter 2 this evening. And I got about three questions I want to ask, okay? And this is kind of prefacing, Brother Tim. What book? Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, I'm sorry. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I got about three questions I want to ask, and these will kind of lead us into the book of Ecclesiastes, or chapter 2 that we're going to study tonight. They may seem kind of odd, one of them may, but nevertheless, let's play along, and then it'll kind of prepare us for chapter 2. Question number one, and you can participate if you want to. You can raise your hand if you want to. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I mean, it's kind of up to you. Question number one, who wants to die tonight? I ain't raising my hand. And I don't think any of us in here would raise our hand either, okay? We don't want to die tonight. But ponder this next question. Sir? Okay, well, that is optional, okay? Question number two. Who wants to live in this world forever? Okay. That question, that second question, is one I think that would make a lot of people think. Now, I'm not saying this in a bad way or any way at all. If there was a row of teenagers sitting here, you would probably get a different answer from the teenagers than you would for these sweet ladies sitting here, sister, these three ladies that were sitting here, because all three of them said no. Why? Why would you get a different answer from these wonderful ladies, back, godly women back here, than you would a row of teenagers? Why? Okay. Yeah. I think that's it. Go ahead. Okay, and we're going to talk about that, Chuck. And I would agree if there's one word that would fit why there is a difference. I think I would agree with Mike. They're tired. I mean, I'm not, forgive me for saying this, I'm not as old. I'm old, but I'm, well, yeah, let's move on. These ladies are a little bit older than I am, but okay, I'm getting old. I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. Well, it ain't over yet, so. Yes, yeah. And yes, ma'am. I think most people that are faithful, no matter how old they are, would say the same thing. You know, if I do have to die tonight, I don't want to, but if I have to, you know, I know where I'm going, because I'm walking in the light. Yes, ma'am. I know that could be true. That can be true. But there is a different perspective. But I think that the reason that the older people might say that is because they are tired. The life experiences, the difficulties, the trials, life, and this isn't true for every case, and the book of Proverbs isn't true in every single case, okay? It's the general rule. Life, for most older folks, have beat them down. Just life, okay? Life's experiences, the difficulties, the trials, the tribulations, the sorrows, the pain, the tears, the depression, all these things have weighed them down, so they're tired, okay? I remember my father-in-law, Gil, and I miss him. He's been gone a few years, eight years. And he used to be full of life, and those of you who knew him, he joked, he kidded around. But at the end of his life, he was ready to go. He was wore out. He was wore out. Life had wore him down to a frazzle. And that's the way life is. Okay, Peggy, did you have your hand up? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the older you get, the same difficulties are there, and you can't handle them like you did when you was in your 20s or 30s. You know, the difficulties are hard. So I think we would all agree with that. But here's the third question, okay? Let me get my notes here. Would you enjoy life more? Here's the third question. If everyone in here who works secular would get a $10,000 a year raise, would everybody be happy or content? Question two, if everyone would get a $100,000 a year raise, would you be content? What if everybody in here was given an extra $1 million a year? Would you be content? Okay. Lastly, what if you were to gain the whole world and everything in it? Would we be content? Okay, well, that's what Jesus says. But let's put that aside right now. But would I be content if I were to gain all of these things, $1 million a year, to the point that I gained the whole world? Would I be content? Anybody want to answer that? Okay. Does that breed contentment? Okay, sounds good. Let me ask you a question that goes along with that. Say you're a member of the church, hypothetically, and say you make $300,000 a year, okay? And your weekly contribution adds up to $5. Now, here's hypothetical. Here's the question. This individual would say, if I only made $600,000 a year, I would give $1,000 a week contribution. Do you believe that? No. No. Paul says, and there's some passages I'd like for us to read. Somebody turn to Philippians 4, verses 11 and 12. I think most of y'all know what that passage says. Somebody also turn to 2 Corinthians 12. Who gets Philippians 4, 11 through 12? Somebody get 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 12. Who wants to get? Brandon, you get 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 12? Can you get that for me? In Hebrews 13, verse 5. Peggy, would you get that? You don't mind. Hebrews 13, 5. Who's got Philippians 4, 11 and 12? Who's got it? Michael? Okay, so can I be content with what I've got? Yes. If I live in a tent, can I be content? Yes. So the idea is that having more doesn't breed contentment, right? And wouldn't you agree to that? Having more does not breed contentment, all right? That's what Paul said. Paul, when he wrote this, was where? Prison. And I ain't talking about TV, radio, you know, pool hall, all this. He was living in a dungeon. Cold, wet, probably, with rats and everything else. He was in a dungeon and he was content with what he had. Why was he content? The key is he had who? He had God. He had Christ. That gave him contentment. If he didn't have God and he was in a dark dungeon with rats and all this other kind of stuff, if he didn't have God, would he be content? No. You wouldn't be content, okay? 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 12. Somebody get that. Brandon?
Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong.
Does that make sense? Is that contentment? Did you understand what he says? It doesn't make sense. I take pleasure. I joy in infirmities and reproaches and needs and persecution and distresses because I'm not a Christian. Would he have said that if he wasn't a Christian? No. He does it for a purpose, for Christ's sake. Because I'm a Christian, I can bear and I can endure all these things, for when I'm weak, then it makes me strong. What is it that makes life bearable? Being a Christian. If I'm a Christian, then I can face the difficulties and the trials of life. But if I'm not and I live under the sun only, life's miserable. Life is miserable because I have nothing else, okay? Hebrews 13, 5. All right, Matthew 16, 26, what does it say? And I think this is what Sister Daly said. Matthew 16, 26, for what shall a man profit if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? That's what Jesus says. So all of this information brings us to chapter 2, okay? And we did that for a purpose. Turn your Bibles to Ecclesiastes, chapter 2. And in chapter 2, Solomon is going to continue his quest that he started in chapter 1 and verse 3, okay? And in chapter 2, he says this, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, but surely this also is vanity. Now what he's going to do in chapter 2, he's going to seek some things that's going to make him happy, okay? Under the sun. Under the sun means what? In this life, what? Without God. Okay, not just in this life, but in this life without God. He says, so I sought mirth, I enjoyed pleasure, but surely this also is vanity. What is mirth? Anybody want to take a shot at it? Not gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Mirth. What is mirth? Anybody got another translation of the word mirth? What? Merriment? What else? Pleasure? Laughter? Joking? You know, merriness, gayness? All these are words of mirth. And in other words, the word mirth means having a good time, laughing, joking, carrying around, being the happy kind of fellow, okay? Solomon sought that, okay? And what did he say at the end of verse 2? He says, "I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish?" So what was his conclusion at the end of verse 2? What does mirth and laughter do for you? It's madness. It does you no good. How many people, I got a guy that works with us, and he's a clown, okay? And I had to get on to him. I say, "Look, so-and-so." I said, "Life ain't funny all the time. You know, there is a time to be serious, you know. So, you know, you need to get serious every now and then about things, okay? Life's not a joke." Anybody know, heard of Chris Farley? Biggest clown there was. How'd he die? Drug overdose. You remember, what was his name? Robin Williams? Hilarious. Some of it. How'd he die? He hung himself. So Solomon says, laughter and being jovial and happy, it's good for certain things. But happiness, I mean joy and gaiety and laughter, that doesn't bring happiness. What if, God forbid, something happened to my wife? And Clint tries to cheer me up by telling me jokes and all this. Am I going to think those jokes are funny? No. Laughter doesn't cure everything. There are only certain things that laughter can do, and being joyful and happy and, you know, all these things. There's only certain things it can do. Solomon says it's madness too, okay? Because it can't fix everything. All right. Number two, or verse number three. Somebody read if you don't mind. Now remember, he's seeking to find pleasure, contentment, and happiness. That's what he's looking for. That was folly in verse number 1 and 2. Do you find, and I'd like for you to read verse number 3 again. I'm going to read the first part. "I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom." You see a problem with that. You see an issue with that statement. If you do, say, what's the problem? What's the issue? They don't mix. They don't mix. You can't guide your heart with wisdom with wine or any kind of alcohol, okay? It doesn't mix. Solomon said, "I had the wisdom, but I tried to find happiness in wine." And this is something that we could go on, but I wanna talk about it here for a minute. If I want to look to somebody, and I wish people who use this as an excuse, I'm not talking about slop down, drag them out drunk. I'm talking about social drinking. Let's talk about that. If I've got an issue, okay, and I've got something that I need help on. Let's say I have an accounting problem. Who am I going to go to? Mac? You know anything about accounting? I go to Brian. Brian knows about accounting. If I want to talk about building something, like a building or something, Michael, you know how to build a building? Who am I going to go to? Chuck? Would that be the wise thing to do? If I've got an issue and I need to know some wisdom from somebody, I'm going to go to the people who's been there and done that and knows from whence they're talking about, right? So why is it that when we talk about social drinking or alcohol or wine, why can't we simply take what Solomon says? Solomon's been there. Solomon has been there. And he says, I know from whence I'm talking. He says, I've had more wine than you could probably ever imagine. The best wines. I'm not talking about the cheap stuff. I'm talking about the good stuff. And I'm speaking from wisdom. You need to listen to me because it's folly. It's folly. Yeah, let me get my paper here. I lose my notes. I'm lost. Somebody, let's turn to some passages of Scripture. We got a couple of them. Proverbs 20, verse 1. Somebody turn to that. Proverbs 23, 29 through 35. And somebody get that. Proverbs 20, verse 1. Who's got it? Anybody? Who wrote that? Solomon. Solomon wrote that. Proverbs 23, 29 through 35. Somebody read it. 23, 29 through 35. Couple of things. Verse 33, your eyes will see strange things and your heart will utter perverse things. What does that mean? Your eyes will see strange things. What does that mean? Yeah, or even your vision becomes impaired. Your heart will utter perverse things. What does that mean? Yeah, you're going to say some things to hurt people or say things you ought not say. Sometimes they call it liquid what? Courage. It might be a meat person, but when they start drinking, they got the courage to say things that they ought, you know, that they shouldn't say. They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. What does that mean? How many times have you seen somebody in an automobile accident and they were slobber drunk? They lived and didn't have a scratch, but killed other people. Okay? And then when I wake, then I shall seek another drink. And in other words, it's an alcoholism. It's strange to me, and I've seen it, folks. I've seen it. I've seen, and I know I'm probably talking to the crowd, but why in the world would an individual, knowing the dangers of alcohol, why in the world would they submit themselves to something like that that can literally destroy their life? Why? Why would a parent or a grand, and I've seen it in grandparents' refrigerators. I've went into people's houses and, I'm talking about members of the church, opened the door and I thought, whoa. Yes, ma'am. That's true. But grandparents or parents, and you open that door, that child comes in there, that grandchild, that child comes in there and opens that door and sees it in there. What are they going to think? It's okay. Mom and dad do it, grandma, grandpa, hey, they do it, it's got to be okay. So why would we submit our children, our own selves to those things? You know the best way not to become an alcoholic? Don't take the first drink, okay? That's the best way. So Solomon not only tries laughter, but he tries alcohol, okay? And he realizes that too is folly. Verse 4 through verse 8. Let's read that, okay? Who wants to read? 4 through 8.
Heart
All right. And musical instruments of all kind. Is that latter part? The lights of the sons of men and musical instruments of all kind. The latter part of verse 8. These things that Solomon mentions, are they wrong? Is it okay to go to a concert with instrumental music, you know? Go to a, you know, I like classical music. Is there anything wrong with that? He mentions houses. Nothing wrong with a house. Anybody in here? I know Robert plants gardens. Is there anything wrong with that? Fruit trees, having servants in your homes, animals, gold, silver, treasures, entertainment, so on and so forth. There's nothing wrong with those, are they? No, there's nothing wrong with those things in and of themselves. But if they become a god to us, then that's when it becomes wrong. And I know none of us probably have an idol sitting in our house, you know, Buddha or whoever else, like some Catholic folks may have. Let me tell you this story. There's one of our customers, and they have quite a bit of, they're fairly, well, very wealthy. And they have spent tens of thousands of dollars on a statue of Mary and a garden that surrounds that statue. And they'll come in, and they have housekeepers that'll come in, and they'll do the thing before they come in. They don't do it on the way out. I ain't figured that out. Why not do it out and in? I mean, but they don't. And they had the priest to come in and bless their house before they moved into their house. Idolatry, you know, we usually don't do that, okay? But when would idolatry, what would be a form of idolatry for us today? Television, what else? Cars, phone, exactly. Who said that? Brother Steve. Anything that comes before God, sports, education, whatever it may be, anything that comes before God is an idol. And we can be lost just as sure as we have an idol sitting in our home. I want to tell you a little quick story. Years and years and years ago, we were taking down a tree. Huge, huge poplar tree had fallen on this house and on this car. So we were working to get it off. And the woman told me, she said, some of y'all might have heard this, but she told me, she says, now there's this little Buddha doll sitting over here in the corner. And I saw it. And she said, please don't hurt Buddha. I think some of y'all have heard this, haven't you? So anyway, we got to the very end of the thing, and we had one limb to cut, and we undercut the limb, and one of the limbs just barely hit Buddha. The dummy was standing in the corner. He should have got out of the way. But he was standing in the corner, and a limb just brushed him. And here was the house, and here was Buddha, and he went over like this and just leaned on the house. I thought, oh, good. So one of the guys went over there and picked him up, and I said, don't pick him up by his head. And I'd be dog, when they picked him up by his head, his whole head come off. His whole head, and that woman come out there, oh, no, you've killed Bum Buddha, blah, blah, blah. That idol cost me $3,000. $3,000. If it had been, and don't misunderstand, my God would have moved. You know what I mean? He would have moved. He wouldn't have stood there. Idolatry doesn't necessarily mean an idol. It can be anything that comes before God. Things in and of themselves are not wrong, but Solomon tried them all. Historians say, and I don't have any way of checking this, but they say that Solomon's wealth, just in gold, now this doesn't include silver and lumber and all the other things that Solomon had, his annual income from gold was $20 million a year. $20 million a year, just in gold. So he knew from whence he was talking as far as the things of this life. All right, verse 9 and 10. Somebody. All right. So Solomon says, whatever my eye desired, I got it. Now, it's hard for us to understand that because we're limited in our financial means. Solomon said, I had it all. Everything that I wanted, every dream that I had, I fulfilled what I wanted. Nothing was kept from me. Okay. Now imagine, as Jesus said in Matthew 16, what if a man gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Solomon had that. He had everything that he wanted. But read verse number 11. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Now that, to me, is amazing. He had tried everything. He had everything. And he said, when I got it all and I had acclaimed everything that I wanted, he said, I stepped back and I looked at it. And he said, it's all vanity. It's worth nothing. Why? Because God's not in the picture. God's not in the picture. Is there happiness in this world? Can you find happiness and pleasure in this world? Sure you can. For how long? For how long? For a season. Things in this life, they lose their glitter after a while. We kind of talked about that last week. Things lose their glitter. But as life goes on, folks, and young people don't understand this, but as you get older, I didn't understand it when I was young, but as you get older, things change, don't they? I want to ask you a question. We got a young man that's been coming. What's your name again? I'm sorry. Chris. I'm going to ask Chris a question. Chris, in the parking lot, and you're a typical young man. How old are you? 19. Oh, he's typical. Typical 19-year-old. I have a Porsche 911, a Ferrari, whatever they have. I have any kind of car out there in that parking lot you want. You want it? Sure. All right, hold that. Sister Westmoreland, do you want that? No. Why? Sister, why would you not? Look at not, well, we're not going to say how old Sister Westmoreland is, but look at the age difference between these two. Why could it mean something to one and not mean something to another? Why? Perspective. It's perspective. Okay. Is there anything wrong with wanting that? Well, no. But when you get older and wiser, things change and things don't mean what they used to mean to you. Right? Would everybody agree to that? Time has a way, and it doesn't matter if we were to live in this life forever. You're not going to stop age. If the Lord lets Chris live, Chris is going to get old and gray-headed, and he's going to retire, and he's going to die too. It's going to happen. It's life. It's the way life is. And then when he gets to be Sister Westmoreland's age, it ain't going to mean nothing to him as much as it did at 19 years old. We're not going to stop age. We're not going to stop life from happening. I'm not going to ask this question. Why do you think people color their hair? That might be a loaded question. Why do people color their hair? And I'm not looking at anybody that color. Why do they do that?
I have no idea.
I can see that, brother. Why do people color their hair? And I'm not saying it's a sin. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. To look younger. What? Stop time. Is that going to stop you getting old? It ain't gonna happen. You can color that hair as long as you, it's not gonna stop you from getting old. You're gonna get old. God's not Father Time, but God has a way of helping us understand there's gonna come death one day. I was Chris's age one time. I was 19. We all were. But it doesn't matter, because things in this life aren't going to make us happy. And that's what Solomon says. When I stepped back and looked at what I had, he says it meant nothing without God. It meant nothing without God. And it means nothing, or it will mean nothing to us today. Turn to somebody right quick. We've got about 3 minutes. Somebody turn to 2 Corinthians 4. Michael, if you don't mind, 16 through 18. 2 Corinthians 4, 16 through 18. And when you think about this, I want you to think about these three sweet ladies sitting in front of Michael. Sister Moon, Sister Daly, and Sister Westmore. I want y'all to think about them when you read this passage. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 16 through 18. And read it loud, Michael, because this is what life is all about. Okay? Go ahead, Michael, read it, please. Who realizes that more? These three ladies or Chris? Those three ladies realize that more than he does. Not that you're dumb, but they understand what Paul means there far more than Chris does. Okay? Galatians 5, verse 24. And this will close us out. Somebody? Galatians 5, verse 24 says, those that are Christ have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Those that are Christians seek those things that are above. And the world doesn't mean as much as it does to those that don't have God. Okay? Next week, we'll start in verse number 12, and then we'll get into chapter 3. Okay? We'll try to get through chapter 3 next week. Thank y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.